Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review and for Jim Garrity today, but we do still have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And we start with the good. Andrew, this was yesterday at the House Homeland Security Committee hearing. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson was the one with the unfortunate task of trying to explain why President Obama changing immigration law on his own was not actually changing the law. And here's the perfect microcosm of that. Jason Chaffetz of Utah, Republican, questioning Johnson, and he even had some visual aids to go along with it. In our case, it'll be an audio aid.
What do you say to someone who believes the president took action to change the law?
We did not change the law. We acted within the law.
Can you play the clip? This is from November 25th. This is the president in Nevada talking about this.
What you're not paying attention to is the fact that I just took an action to change the law.
So you say he didn't change the law, but the president says he changed the law.
We acted within existing law. We acted within our existing legal authority. Listen, I've been a lawyer 30 years. Somebody plays me an eight-word excerpt from a broader speech, I know to be suspicious. Okay? That was very nice.
It says, I'm going to read it back. Now, you're absolutely right that there have been significant number of deportations. That's true. But what you're not paying attention to is the fact I just took action to change the law. So that's point number one. Point number two, the way the change in the law works, and he goes on. He's pretty clear, and he is the president of the United States. This is why we have a hard time believing that Homeland Security is doing the right thing.
So, Andrew, kudos to Republicans on the committee, Chaffetz, the chairman there, Mike McCall, and others for calling Jay Johnson to account. A little bit of sympathy for Jay Johnson in an almost indefensible position, but more good news is that the ridiculous case for this being legal is falling apart here.
It's also sort of perhaps foreshadowing of what a Jason Chaffetz House Oversight Committee might look like. He's going to be the incoming chair in the next Congress. But yeah, I mean, Jay Johnson kind of stepped on the rake with that one. He literally said the opposite, and Chaffetz had it ready to go. I don't know what law school actually teaches about 20-word responses, because it was not eight words, like Jay Johnson said. So I don't know if that makes it any more valid. It shows that the administration's argument on the executive action is struggling to hold water. Even the DHS secretary is struggling to do it. I mean, they have the president's own words. Again, was it the best phrasing by the president? Does he genuinely believe that? Who knows? But it does show that it is a tenuous action that they took. They're sort of struggling to defend it. And little episodes like this don't help their case.
We'll see again what the Republicans actually do in response to this legislatively. We learned more about that yesterday, as Jim and I talked about on Tuesday. Kind of a two-headed approach here, one on funding, at least for the implementation of that particular part of the government funding, and then, of course, the bill to actually roll back the president's orders. On to the bad martini now, Andrew, and, of course, the 2016 field is slowly jockeying into position. Nobody's actually declared yet. Jim Webb on the Democratic side, the only one to even formally launch the exploratory committee, but a lot of people expect former Florida Governor Jeb Bush to be a candidate this time around for the 2016 Republican nomination. And I'm not sure he's making a lot of friends on the conservative side, certainly the conservative activist side. Speaking at the Wall Street Journal CEO Council annual meeting, Bush said, quote, a nominee should lose the primary to win the general without violating your principles. So essentially, his point here is that you can't tack too far to the right or else you have no chance of winning in the general election in November. So therefore, don't cater too much to the conservative activists here. So for a guy who's already basically saying that the president is doing the right thing in the wrong way on immigration and very vigorously defending Common Core, this isn't going to endear him to the base anymore.
Yeah, and it's kind of the opposite of the Romney Etch-a-Sketch playbook that kind of got a little heat in the last cycle where you can say whatever you want in the primary and the general election. You start over. You start from scratch. No one will pay attention to that. I guess Jeb's sort of taking a different perspective on it. He thinks that stuff will come back to haunt you, and we've seen that it does. But at the same time, I guess I accidentally sort of stepped in it when I said, you know, taking conservative positions will haunt you. I mean, it is a balancing act. And it's something that these candidates are going to have to figure out and deal with. But as far as Jeb Bush goes, yeah, he's already seen as sort of a moderate, you know, and as well as sort of the people that don't like the idea of a legacy of a Bush dynasty going up against the Clinton dynasty, and saying something like this definitely turns off what is a lot of primary voters, a lot of grassroots people, a lot of people further to the right. So he may be making his constituency a little bit smaller, but at the same time, you know, maybe this would be his playbook and we'll see how it pans out.
Well, it's interesting that Mitt Romney took a different strategy here, but a lot of people blame conservatives for not showing up in sufficient numbers and potentially costing him the general election in 2012. If, in fact, that's the case, alienating them early might not be your best strategy.
That's a good point. I guess the question would come down to, again, if we're going to follow this to sort of where it would be presumed would be, you know, a Clinton-Bush rematch and sort of whose supporters would be more fired up for them. Clinton seems to have, again, sort of this base that's been around since, I guess, at least 2008 that have been waiting to get her elected for a while. Yeah, Republicans would turn out for Bush, but he doesn't have the same eager, loyal, enthusiastic following. And you're right, that turning them off this early on and alienating them could be a repeat of sort of what we just saw.
Yeah, fascinating. I'm sure Hillary is reevaluating everything now that Jim Webb is probably going to run. So
yeah, exactly.
Definitely got to calculate that into her equation.
I saw something somewhere that was already speculating like what certain this is all very vague. I wish I could remember it. But what this would mean for a 2020 Hillary Clinton reelection campaign. I wish I could remember where it was. But you know, sometimes I roll my eyes when 2016 things come up. There are interesting angles to it, but sometimes I'm a little, you know, come on, let's wait and see. But yeah, I saw something about what it could mean for a potential 2020 Hillary Clinton reelection bid. I guess we'll talk about that next week.
I guess so. Why don't we just start the George P. Bush presidential chatter right now, as long as we're in the business. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And it's been interesting how Democrats have been kind of reevaluating their position on Obamacare in recent weeks. You've got Chuck Schumer saying it probably wasn't the right thing to do at that time. He thinks the Democrats should have spent more time focusing on the economy. Never said he actually would have voted differently if he had it to do over. Now Tom Harkin, who is leaving, the Iowa Democrat, says Obamacare was a mistake, but mainly because he wishes there was a single-payer system. But this week's winner of the Jonathan Gruber American People Are Stupid Award is former Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, speaking with USA Today, and she's upset that people still don't appreciate just how great the Affordable Care Act is. Quote, "A lot of Americans have no idea what insurance is about. I think the financial literacy of a lot of people, particularly people who did not have insurance coverage or whose employers chose their coverage and kind of presented to them, is very low. And that has been a sort of stunning revelation. It's not because people hid it from folks. It's because this is a complicated product." So much as with Jonathan Gruber, Andrew, we can just be grateful that even though they lied to us, even though none of the promises have actually panned out, it's what's good for us. And it's time we just liked it because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I'd say she sort of got this condescending view from Jonathan Gruber, but actually in that same interview, she talks about, she sort of gives the same, oh, he was a guy in the neighborhood type of explanation, where she's like, yeah, he might have been on a conference call, or maybe he was in one of these large meetings, but I never personally interacted with him, you know, even though he received $400,000, you know, as a consultant on this, but again, the same, I don't know who he is. She's echoing a lot of what he said and sort of going further with it in a lot of ways that I guess is sort of just not helping the case for Obamacare supporters. And what's interesting also about her take and even Schumer's and Harkin's is that I think it's actually a sign that sort of Democrats are really coming around to how polarizing it is. I think they knew it leading up to these recent midterms. They knew it was trouble. But I think they're now sort of trying to reframe where they are on healthcare. They're all sort of saying, well, you know, we're not here defending Obamacare anymore. We get it. We get that it has its problems. That's why we wish we had done something else a little bit differently. And so I think you can actually expect a lot of Democrats now, whether they're outgoing or still going to be sticking around, that there's going to kind of be this reframing of it, that they're not going to be, again, defending the policy that they were, you know, putting out bumper stickers for and getting all excited about, but saying, well, you know, we could have done it differently, and now's when we should do it differently. So I think you sort of see a little bit of that from Sebelius, a little bit of that from Schumer and Harkin and all of them. But, you know, at the end of the day, what they're trying to let you know is they just know better.
It is. Yeah. It's a good thing that they have our best interest for us, because we simply can't figure that out for ourselves. And really, it probably is our own fault. And, you know, people like Joe Lieberman, who forced the public option out of the debate. I'm sure it's the moderation to what we actually got that is the reason this thing isn't working very well.
Yeah, one of the things Harkin said was, oh, we definitely had the votes to make it single payer, but you know, we were just trying to appease, you know, these more centrist people. And I mean, you thought 2010 and I guess 2014 were, you know, were waves. I mean, I don't even believe that they had the votes to do that. You know, they had to get every vote they could possibly get with this. But I don't know. I guess I also like the rewriting of history, whether it's Sebelius saying, oh, Gruber wasn't involved at all and rewriting his role, or Harkin, you know, fantasizing about, oh, what could have been. We could have had single payer. But Obamacare keeps on giving in a lot of ways for Republicans.
Yeah. Well, let's not let these people forget it, or the people who are on the ballot next time. Andrew, great to have you with us today. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Take it easy.
Andrew Johnson of National Review, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.